two. Mark, would you like to explain what we're looking at here?
Certainly. Chair Heel, Representative Patridge, House Bill 2232 eliminates the requirement that triplicate receipts be provided to certain parties for certain transfers of funds. It dictates that when certain funds under ORS 293.310 are transferred or retransferred, the state treasurer must notify the Department of Administrative Services, the Legislative Fiscal Office, the department for whose use the lending fund is maintained, and that department's governing body. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I don't think we have anybody who wants to talk on this bill. We do have written testimony from the State Treasury, which is behind the bill in our binder, and there is a recommended amendment, the dash one amendment. So, is there anyone who would like to talk about House Bill 2232? Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2232. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2232.
Chair.
Representative Patridge.
I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2232.
Representative Patridge moves the House dash one amendments to House Bill 2232. Any discussion?
Hold on 2 seconds, Mr. Chair.
You bet.
Thank you. Looking good. Okay. I have no objection. Thank you.
Without objection, the dash one amendments are adopted. Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2232 as amended by the committee with the dash one amendment. Pass recommendations.
Representative Patridge moves House Bill 2232 to the floor, as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion?
We put it on the consent calendar. Oh, okay. That'll be fun.
Don't ask me to.
I forgot about our conversation earlier.
Well, I wasn't privy to that conversation, but I can take three guesses as to what it might be, and I quite agree.
You're a co-conspirator in the...
That we truly ought not to go by consent agenda.
That's right on this important bill.
Yes.
I think we should have three carriers and they should all do the same speech.
If you write it, think about it.
So, without objection, House Bill 2232, and as amended by the dash one, moves to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And then we'll list three carriers for the bill.
For the blame of me and my party.
So we'll close the work session on House Bill 2232.
It'll be fun.
Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2235. Mark, would you let us know what we're looking at?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2235 eliminates the state printer and the state printing section, designates the Oregon Department of Administrative Services as the controller and the manager of all state printing, including printing purchases, authorizes legislative council to revise existing state printer or state printing section statutes so as to recognize DAS, state printing authority, requires that the House, that House Joint Resolution 4, repealing Section 1, Article 12 of the Oregon Constitution be approved by the people at the next biennial primary election before this 2001 Act is made effective. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mike? One of our constitutional officers will come and speak to us. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Fries. I'm a state printer. And as you noted, I am a constitutional officer defined by Article 12 of the state constitution, and that's what we're here today to talk about. The fact that the state printer, which is actually an administrative office, is defined in the Constitution presents some problems for us. One of them being that in the Constitution, there's a requirement that the state printer have no less than 10 years' experience in the art of printing. And as we all know, in the last 150, nearly 150 years, the art of printing has changed substantially. And we believe that the framers of the Constitution could not have envisioned the current publishing and distribution operation in which printing is really a very small part of what we do. And in fact, over time, in the next 2 years, we'll be phasing out what we call traditional print entirely. Today, the product mix consists of digital print, production mail, interagency distribution, and web page design and maintenance, among other things. So what this bill does is eliminate Article 12 of the Constitution pending approval by the voters, and then that's House Joint Resolution 4, that is. House Bill 2235 is actually a statutory cleanup, which would go into effect pending passage of the referendum referred by House Joint Resolution number 4. To give one of the issues, I think, is just the appropriateness of having what is an administrative office in the Constitution. And we have asked for, when we fill this position periodically, and I am ready to leave this position, when we fill this position, we sometimes run into some problems with that 10-year experience because the requirements to run the operation today aren't necessarily printing-related if we look at the top 20 requirements for that job. In the past, we have, from time to time, had to have an administrator and also hire a state printer who had that 10 years' experience but didn't actually function as running the operation. They just fulfilled that constitutional requirement. We did notice just today that there was a drafting error in putting this bill together, and we would recommend that you amend House Bill 2235 to correct the drafting error on page 3, line 22. Add the following sentence: the register shall be obtained from and furnished by the Department of State Police to the dealer on application at cost. We unintentionally had eliminated a line that the state police provides firearms registration forms to firearms dealers, and in cleaning up the state printing language, that entire line was inadvertently deleted. That concludes my testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Any questions?
Could I please? The amendment, dash one amendments, will reinsert the sentence that's in italics? Is that my...
Representative Lowe, actually what it would do is change the sentence that's in italics. It would reinsert it minus the state printer language. Prior to what happened was that entire sentence was deleted in an attempt to clean up the reference to state printing. And really, we should have just had the state printer reference deleted. So the piece that pertains to the Department of State Police providing dealers applications at cost would be reinserted.
So on line 22, we just remove the reinstate the bracketed material except making changing the state printer in line 22 to what's the phrase that you're using?
Department of Administrative Services. Mr. Chair, that would be appropriate. It would also be appropriate to delete that piece of the sentence entirely because the State Department of State Police is required, as other agencies are, to use a state printer for printing services.
Well, it does at cost, which is a different issue.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's correct. It's a separate issue from the state printer piece. And the concern is that if that were deleted, the Department of State Police would not be able to recoup their cost.
Any further questions? Can you give us some background in terms of the nature of the jobs, in terms of the breadth of what we're doing in printing in general?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the current job or the current publishing and distribution operation has changed substantially from what printing was even 10 years ago in the state of Oregon. Originally, this position was created, actually was desired by the territorial legislature that there be a territorial printer, and the issue was to ensure that legislative publications were produced in a timely and cost-effective manner. In the beginning, it was actually an elected office, and in fact, the Constitution provides for that. That was changed in 1906, and it's been an appointed position ever since then. Over time, the nature of the business has changed substantially, too. As I mentioned earlier, we are getting out of the traditional print business, and we contract that kind of work out because that can be done more effectively in the private sector. Our product mix in the actual production facility is pretty tightly defined, and it's high-speed digital laser printing and integration of printing and mail, where we can generate huge postal discounts. We also do the interagency distribution, the central mail function for state government, and then we also do web page publishing and design work, graphic design work. So the nature of what we do has changed substantially over time, and again, the nature of my job has changed because the printing is not really the most important attribute that a person brings to the job. It's basically management experience and a good general management and running a complex organization.
Does the state printer, how is that, it's just an appointment made by the governor, or?
Representative Hill, it's actually appointed by the director of the Department of Administrative Services.
It's a four-year?
Actually, there is no term. It's you serve at the pleasure of the governor and at the director of the Department of Administrative Services. It's an executive position.
I'm just curious, since it's a constitutional, you have to take then an oath, but it is a constitutional office, so I'm just curious.
Mr. Chair, no, I didn't have to take an oath, and I didn't have to run for election either, for which I'm very grateful.
And it's a lifetime appointment. That's incredible, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we'll see whether that's actually constitutional, since we can't create any offices longer than 4 years, so. Anyway. Yeah. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Glover? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Grover Simmons. I represent the Pacific Printing and Imaging Association and also the Independent Employer Association. These two associations are composed of commercial printers, and I think it's fair to say that they represent the industry in Oregon. I signed up on the sheet and marked the column neutral, and I'd like to try to explain that position, if I may. First of all, when these bills hit the ground a few days ago, the printing industry invited Mike Freese to come to Portland and meet with our joint legislative committee to explain to the best that he could what the bills were about. And the thrust of the bill, it seemed after a pretty extensive discussion with a room full of people that Mr. Freese's principal point was the difficulty of hiring a replacement, because it requires, as he just pointed out in the Oregon Constitution, it requires 10 years experience in the art of printing. And he elaborated extensively as to how the art of printing has indeed changed, and we concur with that. But the subject of state printer has been in the Oregon Constitution for 142 years, since 1859. And this bill, on its face, simply obliterates that 142 years history in every single paragraph, etc. And the industry was a little hard put just to sit still and say, well, that's okay by us. And so we tried to come to a better understanding of what you, Mr. Chairman, are trying to accomplish in this whole matter. And we think that it deals with converting public documents to an electronic format and making those available to state agencies and through state agencies to the general public, presumably over the internet and so forth. I'm not too familiar with that whole field, but if I understand the nub of where you would like to go, that's it. And our industry completely agrees with that. We subscribe to that general principle. If that's what you're trying to accomplish, we certainly want to sign on to that. Therefore, I didn't want to sign up on the sheet today as opposing the bill. However, the bill in its present language is truly of some concern to the printing industry. We believe there ought to, in fact, be a state printer. And the function of the state printer ought to be strengthened rather than reduced. It's true that the state printing function has been undermined and weakened in recent years, but we think that's the wrong direction, frankly. But nevertheless, I believe that I know that we can concur with the converting all public documents into an electronic version, making those available to the agencies and to the public in general. And therefore, you don't really need the language of this bill to accomplish that goal. HJR 4 has the 10-year requirement in it. So the other day, the industry said, well, if that is truly the problem, why don't we just simply submit some additional language which says, in lieu of the 10 years experience in the art of printing, just say experience in providing printing services and eliminate the number. So we would respectfully suggest that that is a way to go. And if that were, if my ideas were acceptable, why, you would certainly have the support of the printing industry in trying and helping you accomplish what you're really, what we think you're trying to do. But I'm not positive where it's all going. And with that, I thank you for your time.
I guess I'm confused. Well, number one, this isn't my bill. Oh, it was coming from the Department of Administrative Services. So I'm trying, as I read this, I'm trying to find out what anyone would be concerned about. Just removing a provision from the Constitution. So if I'm understanding, you think we should have a provision in the Constitution that says we should have a state printer.
Yes, sir.
We could pay that person $1 a year, find somebody, and call them the state printer, and then would be okay with it. I mean, I'm trying to find out what the underlying issue is here.
Mr. Chairman, the printer, the printing section does a lot more than just receive a dollar a year. For example, the entire decision-making process of how much printing is sent out to the private sector versus how much is printed in-house is a function of that section, and it runs around $4 million a year. Now, that is another section of the law, and personally, I think that's the target. And if you don't get to that this session, that'll be the target next session, 2 years from now, and we are really concerned about that. So one of my goals is to preserve the amount of work going into the private sector, which is about $8 million per biennium now. And that has gone up, I understand, since we used to use the term $6 million per biennium. Now I understand it's $8 million, and we like the direction. We want to be sure that that function in the state printing section is preserved, and it's managed and controlled by people who understand printing.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I guess I do not disagree with you.
Okay.
I think the private sector in times do things much more efficiently, but I'm just trying to understand in terms of, as I read the constitutional provision, it doesn't guarantee anything. I mean, and the constitutional provision doesn't guarantee that that's going to occur or not occur. And so that's why I'm trying to understand, is there something in this that you find, besides the fact that, you know, there is a state printer in the Constitution, is there something else that is tangible here?
In the Constitution itself?
Mm-hmm.
No, the only provision that seems to be in debate or creating an issue for DAS is the 10-year requirement. And we submitted substitute language, that I think, to address that point. But we'd like to leave the provision as is. Why change it? You can find people with 10 years experience in, quote, printing, and admit that the world of electronics has become a part of the printing industry. We're imbued with it every day, and we can find people with 10 years doing that. Ink on your hands plus the electronics end of it, you can find people who have 10 years experience. And so we don't need to change the Constitution. We don't need to change we don't need what's in currently in 2235, and it seems to me that DAS could simply issue a new administrative rule or regulation saying we're going to convert all these public documents into electronic form and make them available to society as an in-house rule. Why do you need a legal, why do you need a bill to accomplish that? I don't know.
This, their bill doesn't have anything to do with electronic printing. That was just an idea that I wanted to stick in it.
Oh.
That's why I'm confused. I'm looking at this, and all their bill doesn't do anything. That's what, I mean, it just changes the reference from state printer to Department of Administrative Services. So that's why I'm sort of confused with the issue, because it doesn't change anything. There's nothing tangible here save changing the references to the constitutional office.
No, I'm not sure I understand your question, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'm trying to find out what the issue is.
Well, we're trying to find out what the real intent of the bill is.
Mr. Chair,
hello?
I think I'd like to ask a question too. Okay. I understood fully what Mr. Clemens said about preserving the sanctity of the Constitution and the traditions of our state. I have that concern too. I was not aware that the state printer officer, constitutional officer, makes a decision about how what percentage of the printing that gets done by the government is done by private contractors, private sector, and I was interested to learn that it amounts to some $8 million per biennium. And I would like to have further testimony by the state constitutional officer regarding that, because when he visited me in my office, we didn't discuss that, and I'd like to know more about that. But before we get to that, I'm also concerned about our good chairman, the good representative from Hillsborough's comment about it doesn't make any difference to change the Constitution. I guess I didn't understand your statement, Jim, about it doesn't do anything.
Well, I mean, the effect of this measure doesn't do anything. All it does is change reference, is what I was referring to.
Oh.
So, and essentially, we could do this and still have the state printer, but make no reference to the state printer in statute, and you'd have the same effect. You just have to name someone a state printer that would have no function. So that's why I'm trying to find out what the issue is, because we're talking about making sure that we're still printing out in the private sector. And this has nothing to do with that, you know. And I'm trying to find out what the relationship here is in terms of, because we don't vest, I think, those decisions in the state printer today. Those decisions in terms of outsourcing and printing are made by DAS. And so that's why I'm sort of, we have a constitutional officer who doesn't have the authority, because we don't, and the statutes don't give him that authority today. And so it's kind of, we're trying to keep something that I don't think has the effect that you want. And that's why I'm just confused to what the issue is.
So. Mr. Chair, and Representative Lowe, addressing the question of, as you mentioned, outsourcing, I can be corrected, but I am certain that the process of determining whether a particular job is retained in-house and printed in the state printing plant or sent to the private sector is a function of the state printing section and of that state printer. It's his responsibility or that person's responsibility to oversee that function. And that has historically been the case. And I'm sure that's still the case. So that is an important thing we wish to preserve, and we don't see the need to make that change. So if Representative Lowe, if that's a whole new area of inquiry and concern, Mike is truly the expert in the state on that. He can share with you how the process works. And actually, it's his documentation that I was using to tell you how much volume is involved.
Mike, can you go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. I got to change chairs. I'm sitting in Mayhew's chair, and I can barely see over the dais. You don't want me to sit there.
Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Mike Fries. I'm a state printer. And I can clarify, I think, a couple of points. We do, in fact, contract out, as I mentioned in my testimony, close to 60% of the dollar volume. That changes over time. And if in statute, and this is something, again, that the authority would be reassigned to the Department of Administrative Services, but in statute, ORS 282.020, and subsection 3 defines the rules which generally govern how the state printer contracts. It says the state printer may advertise for bids and award contracts for state printing, but the policy of the state printer in deciding what work shall be let by contract shall be dictated by questions of good business and economy. So the principle there is that if we can get a better deal, a better value by contract, that's what we should do, and that's in fact what drives our decision. If we can do it more effectively in-house, that's what we do.
Follow-up questions, sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike, so do you in fact make that decision? Are you actively involved as the state printing officer and constitutional officer in making that decision, or just really somebody else at DAS decide who gets what business?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I would have made that decision as a state printer, but in effect that decision is delegated to the person who's responsible for running the contract services unit and customer service unit. And this guiding principle is what drives that. We have, as I mentioned earlier, a narrowly defined product mix, and that's a product mix where we know we're cost effective. Areas where we know we are not competitive, we will occasionally put a job out to bid and actually have the printing plant bid on it as well. We don't do that a lot because we don't want to get into a direct head-to-head competition with private sector vendors. There are some things that we know we're just not as effective at, and we contract that out. And then we do periodic market surveys and rate studies to determine whether, in fact, we're cost-effective at the product mix.
One last follow-up question, if I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So what you're telling me, is it true and that there is no plan to change that policy? There is no desire within DAS or within your office to change the policy of continuing to send out that high of a percentage to the private sector? And that this constitutional amendment is not an attempt to end run that process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, no, and perhaps put that in context, I could frame it this way. If we did nothing and that constitutional officer remained exactly as is, if it was the intent of the Department of Administrative Services to change that policy, we could do that. This law does not impede us doing that. What drives the decision here, again, is this piece in subsection 3 of 282.020 that says we will make that decision based on what's good economic sound. It's not our intent to change that. The sole purpose of these two bills is to remove that obstacle of the constitutional officer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, I just had a question on whether there may be an unintended consequence by your definition of printing within the bill, because I just looked at it to a great degree in terms of duplicating and copying. Do you see any problems? Obviously, you're going to have to come back with an amendment, so if you guys can look at that. I mean, it looks like DAS is going to control the copy machines and everything else, and maybe do that now. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, that, in fact, is true, and that is and that has always been in statute, so that's not a new provision.
So you're going to decide what the charges are for various agencies. If someone wants a photocopy of this, that, or the other thing, that all goes through DAS?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, no, that is not correct. What we do is we look at what we call high-volume copiers, and that's currently defined as 60 page per minute plus. When an agency requests a high-volume copier, they have to seek the approval of the state printer, and which would be changed to the Department of Administrative Services. The purpose for that is that we don't want to have state agencies creating little print shops out there that are inefficient and very cost ineffective. So we'll examine what their needs are and devise a solution that meets the agency's needs.
Okay, thanks.
Mike, have you had any conversation? We don't have a fiscal office yet on me. I'm just curious what the cost of sending this out to put it on the ballot.
Mr. Chair, our understanding is that there are four slots reserved for resolutions and referendums to the ballot. So if this were one of those four, there is no additional cost. That's already baked into the election process.
Mr. Chairman, may I inquire? I love history and respect it. And I like tradition, too. And I don't like to discard tradition or old Christmas ornaments or anything. You should see my garage. But what was the founding fathers' intent, do you know? Why is this so important, a piece of how Oregon ran in 1849? Is that right, 1849?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, actually it started in 1847 with the territorial legislature. And then in 1859, when the Constitution was actually approved, this article was part of that Constitution. The reason for that is because, and you see this in a lot of Western states, there is a provision for a state publisher or a state printer. In those days, there were very few options in terms of printing, and it quickly occurred, I think, to legislative bodies that you can pass bills, but it's hard to enforce laws if there's nobody to print them. Nobody knows what was decided. The problems that they had, and this is pretty well documented, getting printing consistently were severe. And one of the problems is that they would contract with a printer, and they would get halfway through delivering the bills and then run out of funding and go back to the legislature seeking more funding to complete the printing of the bills. That was a big problem. So the legislature decided that at that point to secure, basically to ensure that they could get their bills printed, and the legislative publications printed to take control of that process. And that's why we have a provision for the state printer in the Constitution. In those days, also, it was a highly political position. As I mentioned before, people ran for office. And some of the first state printers were individuals like H.L. Bush, who founded the Ladd and Bush Bank here, and also the Statesman Journal. Henry L. Pittock was another state printer, the founder of the Oregonian. So they were people of pretty high stature and usually major players in the political parties in those days. That's not the case today.
Whatever. Mr. Chairman, if I can add another bit of colorful history. At one point, a gentleman was offered, made this offer. You can either be governor or state printer. What's your choice? And he elected to be state printer. I guess that's where the money was. Nevertheless, it's just one of those tidbits that's part of the history of the printing industry. I think probably to get my focus back before the committee is that we would like to see the role of the state printer not only preserved but strengthened like it used to be. John Chamberlain used to be the state printer, and the terms control state printing and manage state printing had some real meaning under his administration. His philosophy was well-defined, well-known. He protected the work and kept it in Oregon as much as possible, and we thought that was a good place. And we have seen when this function was transferred from General Services to DAS, there has been repeated efforts to, in my view, undermine and weaken the role of the state printer to the point that it's being described now as almost just an administrative function. As a matter of fact, Mike isn't even physically located in the plant anymore. He's been elevated somewhere else. So somebody else physically is in charge of the day-by-day or oversees the day-by-day operations, almost like a superintendent or a foreman or something like that. So we just believe that that's the wrong direction. We would like a strong person in charge of state printing, including the electronic version of it, if you will, and that can all be accomplished, I think, without deleting that subject from the Constitution or the statutes as proposed here, and that we can all live together and electronic world can be accomplished with the endorsement of the industry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like this is a I feel like from the printing industry side, it's a matter of pride, basically, is basically part what I'm seeing where we're going. I don't think that there's necessarily a logical argument in this age of desktop publishing and high-speed, you know, high-speed copying and everything else. But and I understand the printing industry, and I understand the historical perspective. I did have another question. While we went down the page and talked about the legislature printing the laws and those being important, I think I had a conversation with Mike and some people from DAS in my office about how much we spend for printing in the state of Oregon during the legislative assembly. I think during the legislature we'll spend about $100,000 a month.
And sometimes it exceeds that. It changes, of course, with the volume of bills that are produced and as the calendars grow in size.
So I think we spend a lot of money on printing for a lot of things that don't necessarily become law.
Indeed.
Either. And I think that's something that this committee should look at some point in time is if we're spending $100,000 a month for 6 months, if we can probably put in a very nice electronic document imaging system that we don't have to waste the taxpayers' money on a continuing basis.
Yes. Grab the state printer and move back to the legislative control.
But I'd drive you crazy by asking you during session every minute, how in the heck do I retrieve this document off? May I make a comment, Mr. Chairman? I want to make sure I get this right. The Constitutional Office of the State Printer has rich historical traditions. It serves no present function. Its continued existence costs us a dollar.
It costs us more than that.
All right, $1.50. And
Mike makes more than that, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure that if he were not performing his duty, whatever it is, he'd be working under the rubric of DAS instead of you'd still be fully employed and get your pension and correct?
Correct. I do work for the Department of Administrative Services.
Correct. Okay, so this constitutional office costs us $1, rich history, and it doesn't do any harm, and it wouldn't particularly do us any good to get rid of it. So do we throw out history for $1, or do we keep the history?
I'm sorry, I mentioned it. I
vote for the history.
If I could make a point of clarification there, Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe. In fact, we didn't take this cause in a cavalier fashion. We didn't want to take a charge of the Constitution because I have the same respect for the sanctity of the Constitution, I think, that you do. And also for the rich history of the state printer and the role that it's played in the state of Oregon. The problem that we're running into, though, is that we can't simply have a figurehead state printer. This is what the legal advice that we're getting from the Attorney General's office, and that does create a problem. We couldn't just put somebody in a ceremonial position and pay them $1 a year. They actually have to run the program. This is again, at this point, informal. We have not asked for a formal opinion because we don't want to be at this point constrained by that, but that's what drove this effort.
I know we've spent a lot of time on this, and I thank you for your kind indulgence, Mr. Chair. But if it's true that the Attorney General's interpretation is that he has to actually run the office, has to be a print man of experience or woman of experience, and you want to go into an electronic age direction, then isn't it true that the real reason why you're sitting here is because we want to take the state in another direction than print?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, that in fact is the case. The publishing and distribution operation, and again I call it that because it's not the state printing operation anymore, has already moved aggressively in that direction, and the state of Oregon is going to continue to move aggressively in that direction. Print is while it's a part of history, is not going to be nearly as important as it has been in the past. That's just a fact. It's changing. And so at some point, it'll become a real problem because we won't even be able to find somebody that has 10-year printing experience. And it doesn't make sense to have that in an operation that isn't doing printing, from our perspective.
And you would fear that somebody with a print, old-fashioned, old technology background might not be able to provide the right direction for an e-government or a government of the 21st century. Is that the deal?
That's correct.
Do we have a comment from Mr. Clements on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lowe, well, we don't concur with that analysis at all. We believe that there are people who have modernized and kept up with the world of electronics, and that's why they are successful printing companies, as you well know. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in business doing exclusively old-fashioned printing. It's a world of electronics and the graphic arts communication industry, big time, and we have competent people all over Oregon who do that kind of work day by day, including Mr. Jerry Thunell, who is president of Shelton Turnbull, and Eugene, who may wish to testify today if it seems like it's necessary. But do you want to talk about the history of printing and how it has changed? Now, he's kept on the cutting edge of it. He's sitting right there. He's available to you for that conversation. We believe that the role of the state printer has not been fully deleted at all, and it shouldn't be a staff function. It ought to have some strength and some muscle, some policy activity to it. And the volume of printing that goes into the private sector is, to some extent, affected by the philosophy of the state printer. We want somebody in there who is pro-private sector and not the other way around. And that's just a list, just part of a long list of things that the printing industry could bring forward to the committee as concerns. So I appreciate your taking it seriously, too. We didn't want to be flip about any of it either. This is a serious matter to the printing industry, and just want to be sure that we're not too light about it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2235? That will close public hearing on House Bill 2235. Let's open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 4. That's the same issue we just spoke with. And if nobody has anything new to say, you'd like to come up? Invite you?
Not really, but
welcome.
I'm politically inclined, so you have to bear with me, okay?
Please introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Jerry Tunnell. I'm the owner of Turnbull Printers in Eugene, Oregon. I've been in the printing business 41 years. Just celebrated my 41st anniversary here Tuesday. I don't get involved in public speaking anymore like I used to years ago, and I'm not as articulate as some speakers. But years ago, one of the things that Mike is not telling you is the state printer used to have a lot of teeth. He ran state printing, and he didn't run just a state printing office. He ran state printing. He had the power to tell the University of Oregon or Oregon State University or any university or any city or any county that, no, you're not going to buy that piece of equipment. That's not necessary. You either send it up here or have private enterprise do it, da-da-da. Well, as years went on, that got, you know, shuttered and shuttered till it got smaller and smaller and just no value. And Mike himself is... if he will tell you, he doesn't want to be a state printer anymore. He wants a higher position in the state, and that's fine. I think you ought to go take it. But I think what he should do, and I happen to agree with whoever said that we're not following the Constitution right now. We're not. He's not even working in state printing anymore, and he is a state printer, and he should be. And he's breaking the Constitution as far as I'm concerned. And I think you ought to put some teeth in the state printer's position. let him run State Printing? Why is it all, why after 140 years is it so important to eliminate State Printer? It was important for those folks in the Department of General Services, Administrative Services, to dilute the power of the State Printer, and now they want to eliminate it totally. I think the state, you and I, all of us together would be a lot better off if we had a strong State Printer that controlled State Printing. And it's not happening right now, and that's too bad.
What would you suggest we change? I mean,
give the State Printer the power to run State Printing.
But I mean,
we don't have one right now that does that.
That's a very broad statement.
No, it's not. It's very concise.
But from a practical sense,
you call a copy machine a copy machine now, you don't call it printing. Do you know that you're doing more printing today than you've ever done before? You just call it copying. Every single office and every single building in this state administration has a copy machine in. And what they're trying to do now, when they're trying to, Mike says that they're working on they're testing out a new machine that copies 190 or 600 pages a minute. You call that peanuts? That's just one machine. They've got many more, and that printing is as volatile. I mean, you might be talking today about, you know, the internet and stuff and electronics and stuff, but you're never going to do away with paper. I know you'd like to, but you're never going to do away with paper.
Mr. Hill, may I ask a question? If we did as you suggest, would that save money for the state? Would we be more efficient? Would there be less paper? Would it be better for the people?
I don't know if it would be less paper. I doubt very much if there would be less paper. Would it be more efficient? I feel it would be much more efficient to let the state printer. The state signed off. I don't know if you folks, I don't know how long you have been, you know, running the government here, but are you all fairly new in the positions, or?
Through another constitutional provision.
That's right. You only get this.
Nobody's been around here more than the last 6 years. So.
I forgot about that. That's right. Ask that question again. I get senior more.
Are we gonna save anything? Will it be better for the people?
I think it's overall it'd be much
why?
Better. Well, much better, first of all, because you're going to stop proliferating all these copy machines, and today's marketplace is called copy machines, but your copy machines happen to be, a lot of them are one color right now. Well, there's a lot of two-color copy machines out there now on the marketplace. They've got digital four-color printing both sides, 100, 150, 200 pages a minute on the marketplace. That's where the next issue is going to go with the state. Well, we're going to bring this digital copier in. These are high-speed, sophisticated printing machines that they're talking about. These are not 2-bit copy machines that they're talking about. This is highly sophisticated equipment that's very capable of outputting, you know, excellent quality work. And let the state printer run that. Let the state printer control that. Don't let the Department of General Services or the Department of Administrative Services control that, because they make it just another. And I'm not trying to say what Mike has done is bad. I'm just saying that he is leading it, you know, going another direction. And they have other plans to do other things. And let the state printer run state printing and control that stuff. Let's say that you didn't save a dime, but what would happen if you had all this copying work that you have going on right now all over the state, not just, you know, here in Salem? What would happen if that was in the hands of private enterprise, making money and paying more taxes and stuff? What would happen? Big. That's big dollars. You could close down the state printing plant if you wanted to, but I wouldn't. That particular issue has been brought up to the state printing industry for many years, and we've always said no, that the bills and things need to be produced here and stuff, so they need to find some things that'll, you know, take care of those people. But God, today, you know, with electronics, all good printers have the capacity and the ability to handle electronics. We do a lot of work for the state of Oregon now. We have 3 contracts that with the state of Oregon right now.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Joint Resolution 4? Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Representative Hill, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Fairborst Paksaresh. Would you like that spelled? Okay. I am currently managing publishing and distribution. I'm the same weak, incompetent person that Mr. Tunnell and Mr. Simmons have talked about as far as leading publishing and distribution. I just wanted to clarify a few points. In fact, today there is no such a thing as a state printing anymore. We did used to have a state printing as a division within the Department of Administrative Services. That was changed back in 1993, I believe, where printing became part of a bigger division. And eventually we changed the name from printing several years ago to publishing and distribution. There were several reasons for that. One of the main reasons is that the functions have now merged between printing and mailing. We used to have various state agencies both involved in printing and mailing functions, and in our mind that was something that was very inefficient. So by merging those two functions, now we are printing and distributing documents from the very same location. And in fact, we are very proud of that because we are the first state in the country that has accomplished centralizing printing of offset printing, copying, mainframe printing, and mailing and distribution. And in fact, we've won several national awards for that, and other states are regularly contacting us and visiting us about how to accomplish that. So I did want to make that point, that there is no such a thing as a state printing per se anymore. Printing is a function of a bigger activity called printing, publishing and distribution. Secondly, I do agree and concur with both Mr. Tunnell and Simmons that there is a strong person that needs to be in charge of any state operation, including publishing and distribution. However, that person does not need to be called a state printer, and it does not need to be a constitutional officer. I think that was the problem that we ran into when we looked at this issue. Not only the 10-year experience, but is it appropriate in the 21st century to have a constitutional officer, one of the only four constitutional officers in the state of Oregon that happens to be the state printer? The function of contracting out printing would not change. This bill has nothing to do with how much gets contracted out and what stays in-house. And in fact, I don't blame Mr. Simmons for having some doubts about what our intentions are. What I can say is that if we do not contract out to the private sector, we would not be doing our job. In fact, like Mike said, we look at our mix, we look at what we can do best, we contract out what we cannot do efficiently, and that will continue under this bill. And nothing in this bill changes the function of printing as it exists today. Those are the points that I wanted to clarify, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any further questions?
No, I'm exhausted the topic, I think. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Joint Resolution 4? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 4. Let's open up public hearing on House Bill 2038. Okay, if you want to what we're looking at.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Representative Lowe, House Bill 2038 exempts information about an individual provided to or received by a state agency over the Internet from disclosure under public records law. It specifies that to be exempt, an individual's information be in connection with a transaction involving the transfer of goods or services between the individual and the state agency. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pat Lundeen. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services, Information Resource Management Division, and I'm the Electronic Commerce Manager for the state. I'm here again representing the Department of Administrative Services, but I'm also testifying for all state government agencies. What I'm here to talk about today is probably one of the most important issues that I believe we'll be dealing with this legislative session. The recommendation of DAS is to pass House Bill 2038 with proposed amendments. Clearly, the way the bill was drafted in its original form was far too broad, and if anything, it did bring a lot of attention to the subject, which is not a bad thing. I think we need a lot of discussion before we reach a conclusion. The issue or problem that's addressed by this bill is that This legislation is intended to identify particularly what information that we obtain when the state does a business transaction with a customer, with what information we'll be able to keep confidential. While there are many agency-specific exceptions to the public records disclosure law, we are pursuing an enterprise IT strategy at this point, where we have increased reliance on using e-government to serve citizens, and we're doing that by sharing the operations and responsibilities among agencies. With this shared responsibility, we really need additional enterprise statutory direction. We would like to have this clear, what information are we going to protect and have it affect all state agencies. So what this bill will do is define specific computer transaction-related information, exempt it from retention, and protect it from disclosure. And then a second piece is that it'll identify personal financial information that should be protected from public disclosure, regardless of whether it's provided over the Internet, by mail, or by telephone. How the bill will change current law is still uncertain. The exact provisions and where we would either need to introduce new legislation or amend existing will have to come through consultation with legislative counsel. We've met with the Department of Justice for the last week and have gotten a much clearer set of boundaries of what we want exempt, and we'll continue to work with them as we move to drafting the final bill. The discussion portion, we really know that we're all using the Internet more to serve citizens than ever before. And because of that, there's really focused more attention on the need to ensure the confidentiality of that information that citizens provide us, particularly personal identity information and personal financial information. Citizens expect that that information that they provided as part of just doing business with government will be kept private, again, regardless of how it's provided to us. Unless we know that unless personal identity information, personal financial information is excluded by statute, it will be subject to a public records request, and we may have to reveal that information. Every state agency currently retains, and with this bill, they would still retain the custodial responsibility for what's in their control, the data that are in their databases. They have the responsibility for understanding the statutes related to the disclosure of that data that's under their custodial responsibility. Because it varies from agency to agency, depending on the population that's served, we do have an exemptions from our public records law that it's growing larger and larger. What we're trying to do here is establish a relationship with citizens where they can trust the new channel that we're adding of doing services over the Internet, because the citizen's expectation of privacy is much higher than it's ever been before. I would like to just briefly go over the attachment, which really describes the two categories we're trying to exempt. The first is computer information. The computer information that we're interested in protecting is information that's routinely tracked by the servers of the state as part of the transaction of doing business with citizens. I mean, this does get quite technical, but just when anyone does a transaction over an Internet website, the person who is providing that information to the citizen picks up information from the citizen as just a byproduct of that person hitting their website. And that includes the full list of information that's listed below. We automatically collect this. This is the way we track information about how much traffic we have, whether a user's browser is supported by our website. And that information is very important for us to conduct business, make sure if we need more capacity, we find out. We track the information by volume and by time of day. So we are proposing an exemption for both retention and to protect it from disclosure, because it I think the important part here is, by itself, this information is not particularly a threat to the citizen's privacy, but the combination of this information with other personally identifiable information is very, we feel, is a potential risk for identity theft. And it is not the kind of technical information here is only of use to someone who has malicious intent in terms of, I don't know what that's difficult to define what an individual's intent was, but we feel it's important to protect it from public disclosure. The second category is specifically personal financial information. We've tried to be specific, identifying the credit card numbers and the expiration dates, the bank routing numbers and the checking account numbers, and the individual citizen's selection of which payment company they make when they do a transaction. Again, I want to emphasize that we're attempting to do this so that we can give clear direction to all state government agencies, as well as we'll be able to then create an internet privacy statement that really tells the citizen what we're collecting, what we plan to do with it, and what information we will not disclose, and what information we are required to disclose because of public records. Right now, we don't have the ability to write a privacy statement that builds confidence with citizens, because any privacy statement we've attempted to write has been refused by the Department of Justice because it promises too much privacy. Anyway, I think we are here today to get on the public record what our concerns are and to work toward how we're going to finish and final draft some legislation. Be glad to answer questions.
Thanks. Not disclosing the public information is, I guess, one thing to third parties or outside sources. What kind of information are we keeping on citizens? Are we placing cookies on their computers and tracking them as they contact state agencies?
Chairman Hill, Representative Patridge, I think the exact answer to that question is I don't know specifically. We are in the process of trying to create the privacy statement that we would say explicitly, if we want to place a cookie on a citizen's own system, we would disclose that ahead of time. And the intention being, by placing that cookie, it allows us to provide further service to that individual when they come back to our site. And many citizens do come back and do business multiple times with the same or multiple agencies. It's a convenience factor. The direction I've been giving to state agencies who ask about this is, if you are creating web applications that do provide cookies, that you disclose it at the time. We're just beginning to move into the transaction web applications.
So how many state agencies are placing cookies on individuals' computers that aren't disclosing that?
Representative Hill, Representative Patridge, I have no idea of that information. I'd be glad to see if we can find that information out.
Then there's another follow-up. So does the department have is there a policy that you have to disclose it, or is this kind of, people can do whatever they, you can do, we advise you of this, but people can do whatever they want. We can track you. We can do whatever you want. So if Kathy or I, as lawyers, want to come in and ask for public disclosure of the cookies, we can come in and find out where people are contacting state government.
I'm working on it right here. I'm trying to get you all to know.
Anybody in the room know what a cookie is?
And Representative Patridge,
there's some up in the House lounge.
I knew you weren't talking about those.
They're oatmeal raisin, I think, today.
Thank you. I'm learning so much.
There is not a policy regarding cookies for state agencies. We have been trying for, I would say, at least 6 months to get in front of this. We need legislation that tells us clearly whether we can exempt cookies information. Once we know if that's exempt, I will be able to give clear direction to the agencies that if you provide cookies, you must disclose it ahead of time. That's the advice I've been giving agencies, but it is not in writing. But it will be a policy, and it'll be our privacy statement as soon as we can get the legislation clear.
Should we first figure out how we're going to deliver and what underlying software we're going to use to deliver electronic commerce, because some, you know, systems are cookie-based and they're just temporary cookies, and so we want to be very careful in terms of throwing class of, you know, cookies and saying all we don't want to do is because it may be a class of software which is placing temporary cookies on systems rather than the permanent cookies, so we know that you went there and then the next time you show up for Representative Lowe's benefit.
I understand that. And that cookies are bad. I got it.
They're not necessarily bad. They're the device that allows when the next time you go to Yahoo, it pops up and says, welcome, you know, welcome to Representative Lowe's.
They're a flag.
So,
yeah,
and
yeah.
They can be sometimes malicious depending on what information is stored there. And, you know, and
they can be invasive.
They could be, but I mean, but they're also very useful in terms of how you design systems. So we need to be very careful in terms of how we do it because they're not all that, and they can be temporary in nature. So I mean, we're talking about information here, but without it may depend on what application we're doing.
Representative Hill, we have not selected the development tools that we are going to be providing all state agencies for how this will be rolled out in the future, but that doesn't, I don't know what is going on currently in agencies to answer Representative Patridge's concern.
But is there some kind of, I mean, we have all these groups that are meeting with DAS, IRMD, and everyone else around the table to find out, you know, what we're doing electronically and talking, we're supposed to be talking to each other. Is there a plan? Has it been brought up or discussed in the meeting whether it's good for state agencies to track when people are tracking their websites? Is it helpful for your service delivery? I mean, I guess that disclosure thing is important for how we decide what's confidential information and what's non-confidential information. I mean, some of that information may be helpful to us as a legislative body or may not. May be helpful to you as a state agency or may not, or may just be invasive, period, and shouldn't be something we're doing.
Representative Hill, Representative Patridge, that's exactly true. The Electronic Commerce Policy Committee that's met for more than 2 years has addressed this early on as a concern and as a business decision. The use of cookies the way it's available is generally a real advantage to establishing a relationship with your customer, with returning citizens that want to do business. So we value that, and we also believe it's our responsibility to let the citizen know that we're doing that and what we plan to do with that information. Disclosing that is what we feel is very important. So we've had that policy discussion, and we need the statute to make it clear for us.
This bill is not that statute. This is just information. What should be released or should not be released.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further questions?
I'm delighted to understand what my son has been talking about when he's been talking about cookies. I guess it wasn't what I provided him when he was a child, but I get it now. I'm concerned about the bill insofar as our need to protect clients, users of the Oregon Medical Plan and OHP. And let's see, what was the other thing I wrote down there, Jim? Thanks. Make sure we protect social security numbers, home addresses, and most particularly medical data. Those kinds of privacy issues are of concern to me. So why haven't you included that in the bill? I see that the bill only addresses financial data and markers that you would use for tracking computer information.
Chairman Hill, Representative Lowe, that is quite true. Privacy is a larger issue. We didn't intentionally exclude those items. Mm-hmm. Our range of responsibility at this point is on the financial transactions, and that's where I have focused. I don't know that there aren't other bills coming that already address the protection of medical information. There is a need for that, and DAS will be is actually working with the Department of Human Services to identify those items.
I have just received an indication from a member of the audience that that's in the works, so
right.
I'll relax. Thank you, Pat.
Okay, thank you.
Rose Jade Lincoln?
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Hill and members of the committee. My name is Rose Jade. I'm primarily a patent and trademark attorney. I live in Newport. My concern with House Bill 2038 is that the wording of this bill is extremely broad and vague and grants way too much power and discretion to the agencies. And I ask that the specific intent of this bill needs to be made very, very clear. I understand now after listening in the audience that it's aimed primarily at financial transactions, but I'm concerned that it could be interpreted after the fact to include a broad category of email communications between agency persons and publics and public members and anything that's transmitted over any kind of computer. In my opinion, the public records law already has enough loopholes in it. I have a very specific example of concern. If this bill's passed as is, I believe persons could rely on it as a grant of authority from you to exempt jury lists from the public records law. This is a pet peeve of mine. And as they bring this back over to the Department of Justice and the Judicial Department, they will recognize my name. Currently, jury lists are not exempt from the public records law. However, the lists are compiled on computers in Salem by the Judicial Department, and they are electronically transmitted to each county's courthouse computer. I don't know if the definition of the word internet in this bill would include the actual type of computer that the Judicial Department uses, but I think that's an inquiry that should be made. For Representative Lowe, the jury list does contain name and address information about an individual, which is in information in connection with that person rendering a service to the state. So technically, the jury list could be included in the exemption. However, going to the expectation of privacy, jury lists are made up from DMV lists and voter registration lists, which are absolutely public records. And jury lists have historically, back to the 1800s, and I could bring you the copies of the laws because I'm sort of an expert in this field, despite historic legislative intent that they be public records. In the last 3 years, the Judicial Department and the Attorney General have mounted a very powerful effort to block public scrutiny and auditing of the jury list, which used to be kept manually in registers that were available at the county courthouses, just like voter registration lists were available from the elections office. Now, the Judicial Department recently lost this battle December 31st of last year, and the Oregon Supreme Court in a unanimous decision ordered that the courts allow access to these jury lists again. My concern is that if this bill is passed, they will find some way to build in an exemption to the computerized jury list under this bill. And that's why I'm here today, to just kind of alert you to that, and I hope it doesn't happen. It doesn't sound like it's the intent, but if you've ever been the subject of a refusal to turn over something that's not technically covered by an exemption in the Public Records Act.
Well, trust me, that happens to us every
I've spent 3 years in court testifying about why especially capital defendants needed to see these lists. We weren't given access to the lists. We've had to fight and wait for prosecution on those cases for 2 to 3 years. While this settled itself out in the Supreme Court, I've included the Supreme Court's opinion. While they're going back on these drafts, I've included on the last page of my testimony what I would hope they would give a little better definition of, you know, just 5 of the phrases that are used, because they're really broad terms, and I would ask that they pay attention to the temporal element of it. So if you're just concerned about a Visa card number that's sent with that particular internet transfer, okay, but if you're going to be worried about anything that refers backwards or forwards to the future date or a past date, please be really careful, because it's been my experience that agencies will look to this kind of open-ended language to build in exemptions that you people had no notice of and didn't approve. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you. Sarah Reeder.
Welcome. Thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Sarah Reeder. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. In light of what Ms. Jade has just said, I really have nothing additional to add to that, only that we also believe that the language in the bill as written is overly broad, and we would like the opportunity to work with the department and review whatever amendments that they will propose to the committee so that we know exactly what it is that they would be including with this exemption from public disclosure. So, thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you. Jim?
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association, the nation's largest high-tech trade association. Just a few comments. It appears that we may not be testifying on the base bill, and that this is a work in progress and needs to go back to the drawing board. So I'm not going to, you know, spend too much time looking at the exact language, other than to say that just with my colleagues in the lobby message center, I heard some of the same comments that you've heard. What is a transaction? Does the word need to be defined? What are we trying to get at? Are we too narrow? Are we too broad? So, and it sounds like DAS is already working with DOJ and others to try to get a little better handle on this. I just wanted to comment that this is a, in our industry and with my colleagues around the states and in Washington, D.C., this is probably the biggest issue right now that we're working on, is the whole issue of how do we get our hands around the issue of privacy, both in the internet environment, which is more our specific angle, but you know, this is not just an internet issue. You know, protection of public privacy is a very big issue nationwide. In response to Representative Lowe's questions, in the last couple of years, Congress has tried to weigh in. Whether they've done the right thing or not, you know, I don't know, because there's thousands of pages, but they've both done the HIPAA law, which tries to provide some broad national protections for medical information, which I think is I think the two biggest burning issues are medical and financial. So Congress also wrote the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, which my colleagues in the financial, you know, lobby are still trying to sort out and figure out. So there has been significant national legislation on those two areas, and they're probably the biggest areas of concern. We now, as a National Trade Association, announced a couple of weeks ago in Washington, D.C., that we are We desire to enter into this debate with Congress on the issue of the internet privacy, particularly on the commercial sites. Senator John McCain, Senator Ron Wyden, and others are if they ever get through campaign finance reform, this is probably going to be the next issue they want to deal with this year at the federal level. One of the principles that we've brought to that debate at the national level is that so much of the focus is on commercial sites. You know, eBay, Amazon.com, you know, all that. But we're trying to bring to that debate that government also needs to get its house in order. As government begins to do e-government and e-commerce on its own, you know, it ought to live up to at least the levels of privacy protections that Congress is contemplating to apply to the private sector. And I think you're hearing that. We're trying to figure that out, and I think the people at IRDM or DAS are trying to do that. So, you know, this bill is a start. It's a fairly complex issue. I think the amendments that Pat brought to you today both narrow and widen the debate. The narrow one of providing protection of, you know, the arcane stuff of IP addresses and HTTPs and cookies and all that, that's a It's a very narrow issue, and really most cookies, if you went and looked into DASA's computers, do not have Representative Kathy Lowe and all the websites she looked at in the last 2 weeks. Most cookies are not connected to personally identifiable information. The threat or the concern is that they could be. They are not currently in the stuff. So there isn't, but there is that concern partly because just the broad scale lack of understanding of what they are, and myself included, into the details of that technology. So DAS saying, do we maybe need something in the statute of that very narrow realm, IP addresses, web surfing, but their second suggestion about the whole broad issue of financial stuff in whatever medium, whether you're going down to Fish and Game and buying a fishing license or putting your Visa on the internet, I'm afraid we're opening somewhat of a can of fish here, and probably appropriately, but it gets beyond the internet and the original idea of the bill. So I suspect once these ideas of suggested amendments are circulated in the building, you'll have more people here in the room to discuss this issue. So, finally, I just want to conclude by saying that, reiterating that, the internet is not an island. The internet already and certainly 2 years from now will just be part of life. And, we shouldn't probably look at setting specific privacy statutes for the internet. We should be looking at what we do in general to protect citizens' privacy and data that government collects and data that the private sector collects, and make sure that what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and we have equal standards no matter how we collect information from people, internet or otherwise. So we'll be available to help in this debate, but you've got a lot of experts, and I assume this is going to grow if you really want to get into the details of this bill.
Confident there'll be more people the next time we meet on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any questions for Jim?
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2038? Hearing and seeing none, let's close the public hearing on House Bill 2038. Members of the committee, attached to your packet today was some excerpts from Governing Magazine's Grading the States Management Report Card, talking about Oregon and on financial management, capital management, human resource, information technology grading. I asked Mark to copy another like state and two of the best states so we could sort of compare. He's got the full article. It's a long article with all 50 states. If you want further detail, see Mark on it.
Ooh, we got a lousy grade.
Well, there you go. So that helped frame some of the discussions we have going forward. So with that, without objection, we are adjourned.